Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
1, 2, 3, go.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Hello and welcome. Sorry, I'll start.
That's cool. We'll just leave it in.
All right. This is episode 217. Tonight's show is brought to you by lack of scheduling on my part. So Kenny's not with us because I changed twice and canceled both times, and the people deserve us. I didn't say, they crave us, but it's more of a craving, like scratching, like a mosquito bite. Like, you know it's not going to help, but you do it anyways.
I mean, you have to.
No, but like, it's not going to help at all.
It's just like how my ear itches all the time, and I know that I shouldn't scratch it, but sometimes it's just so bad. And for those of you out there who are wondering what I'm talking about,
my skeleton's itchy.
Yeah, it was back like before, it was in August. Suddenly I was just driving home from Salida one day. I was like going from Howard to Salida. Salida to Howard. And all of a sudden I felt like, holy fuck, like a bug just flew in my ear. Like something is in my fucking ear. And it was very sudden, as if a bug had flown in my ear. And when Matt got home from work, I'm like, I need you to look in my ear. It's been itching all day, and I don't feel anything in there. And I had, at one point in time, a tragus piercing, which is like the front like cartilage of your ear. I had that pierced a long time ago, and I took it out because it always bothered me. Like, I couldn't hold a phone up to my head on that side without it, like, clicking on there, and I didn't really like it, so I took it out. I mean, it's probably been 10 or 15 years since I've had a piercing there, and I thought it was that. I was like, can you look in there and just see? And he's like, it just looks angry. It's like, I felt like a bug flew in it today, and put, like, I don't know, a little Vaseline on it, and I do that periodically. And it turns out that can be a symptom of perimenopause, and low estrogen is itching ears. I had no fucking idea until like 3 or 4 days ago when the Instagram algorithm served me a female stand-up comedian who joked about it in her act. And I'm like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that your ears can itch? And I started looking at, like, it's mentioned as like a lightly mentioned as a possible symptom, but then like you go to Reddit or something where like people talk about that stuff all the time, and people are like, yeah, I just have like one ear that itches all the time. It's like, you gotta be fucking shitting me. So I'm gonna had some other symptoms, and I'm gonna talk to a doctor within the next few days. So it's not just the ear, but that's just like the icing on the cake.
Okay.
What have you been doing, Matt?
Really nothing worth talking about. So this show is going to be short. It won't be sweet. And it will be over before you know it.
Like a bad one night stand. Also been a long time since that. Anyway, so yeah, well, I've just been, like, up to the usual stuff. Beaver stuff. Trapping, being out in the woods. It snowed a good bit here, in the last week. We got a couple rounds of snow, so that's nice. That's good that nothing's catching on fire at the moment. But right now, the 10-day forecast is all warm and dry again. But that's all right. So do we want to just move on from our boring lives and into other stuff? You got anything else that's interesting you?
You know, I did do one interesting thing this week, which is I used the welder more. And it's really cool when you can, it's a MIG welder and it's very cheap. It's like the most affordable one that Harbor Freight sells. And no, it's not great quality. And my welding is even worse. But when you can take two pieces of metal
and glue them together,
and the fancy superheated electricity stuff, and turn them into one piece of metal, it's pretty cool.
Yep.
And I made Andrea an ice spud. Actually, I've made two of them now. I made one, and then the wheels really got to turning in my head on how to do it better. And I came home today and made a different one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know like how many of our listeners care, but it's our show. We can talk about it.
No, we can move on.
No, I want to tell them like so beaver trapping this time of year often involves a lot of ice.
It needs an icebreaker.
Yeah. And I wasn't very, I don't know, like I've never had to deal with ice before. Like I don't know like when you can walk on it. And I mean, I looked up some guidelines, like when it's this thick, you can walk on it. When it's this thick, you can drive on it. That kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I don't know how fucking thick the ice is. And so I need one of, someone suggested I should get one. And then I also got, you know, a couple of people that suggested just tips to me on, someone told me to get an ice spud. And I looked up what that was and showed it to Matt. And then I got another tip from our patron, Brady. And he said, if you're not sure about getting out on the ice, make sure that if you're wearing waders, unbuckle the straps. Because if you fall through and water floods into your waders, you can just get out of them. They won't turn into an anchor for your body. So that was...
body anchor.
Yeah, so that was a good tip, and I did that today. So, you know, there was a spot where I wanted to go, and it was super iced over, and so Matt went with me just for safety. I mean, normally I'm going doing this stuff alone, but, you know, just for safety, having an extra person there to help out, or at least, like, I don't know, hit the SOS button on the inReach if it's that bad. Yeah, he went with me, and I used the spud that he made, the first one, today. And, you know, I walked out and I chipped a hole and looked at it. And I was like, well, that's like three or four inches thick, and kept walking and saw another spot that looked like maybe it was a little thin and chipped through that. I was like, no, that one's all right too. And yeah, it was really useful for that. And then it was really useful because I was able to actually go out and cut holes in the ice and put beaver traps in. So we'll see how that works, because it's way more difficult because you just can't see anything. Like, you can normally, like, you can see where they swim around and stuff and put a trap, like, right where they're going to swim into it. But with the ice, you can't do that. So I had to, like, I probably chipped, like, 20 holes in the ice before I figured out, like, where I should maybe set the traps. And I don't know. I'll see in the morning. But, yeah, it's difficult. But yeah, I'm really happy. I can't wait to take the one that he made today out there, because it's really nice. But all right. New shit.
No shit. I'm going to rip on something real quick.
Yeah, do that. There's only like one thing that I thought was like kind of interesting. So you go rip on that.
Stinner Titanium. This is from Bike Rumor. Stinner Titanium Clunker packs old school style with new school price.
I mean, that sounds like a very truthful headline, an honest headline.
Look, I'm just saying, if I spend $5,200 on a clunker and it's got straight gauge titanium tubing and Velocity rims on it, like...
I didn't even look at that.
I just... No, the thing that made me do it was like I don't even understand it. Like, it's so expensive, and it's not even that cool.
But it says Stinner.
But it's $5,200. Like, you could literally...
That's a coaster brake on the back, then?
It's coaster brake on the rear. Like, you could buy an Esker Hayduke and put a different rear wheel on it, and you'd have a fully functional 1x12 mountain bike and suspension fork and two hydraulic disc brakes, and get somebody to build you a coaster wheel. And I know that there's going to be some issues, but, like, yes, you would need to find some of their classic QR dropouts, which they exist in the world. I have a pair in my drawer. I will never sell them in case I ever want to clunk one of my Eskers. I say Eskers, one of mine, meaning, like, I'm going to own one probably in perpetuity. It'll just change over time because I'm a very
fickle
bitch. But you could do that for like $4,000, and you would have a 1x12 system and two hydraulic brakes for when you got bored and you wanted to actually go ride the thing. Like, yeah, it wouldn't be tied, but it'd be a usable steel mountain bike. Like, if someone tried to sell me this like I'd ask them if they wanted to go outside. Like, you want to go in the parking lot, dude? Like, you are out of your mind. That's all. Like, it's a $5,200 titanium. Yeah, I'm not impressed. Portland Design Works releases the Bingo headset spacer, which essentially allows you to run a handlebar mounted, like stash spot bottle holder type dude without needing to wrap it around your stem.
And that's really nice considering that a lot of stems are very short these days.
Well, not only that, but I've thought of the best use for this. Not only are stems getting shorter, so you don't have a lot of real estate to clamp, but if you bought one of these for the princely sum of $25, this is appropriately priced, by the way. It's $25. That's okay. I'm okay with that. The cool part is instead of having to undo the straps that go around the stem, which can be the fiddliest, especially if you're running two and you end up needing to use one piece of Velcro to go through two, you could just pop your compression bolt out of your, like, the top bolt out of your stem and just put a regular spacer back in and leave your bags attached to this. So you'll only have to set it up once. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that. That's really cool. That would have been really useful when I was doing that sort of thing several years ago.
Yeah. So there you have it.
We have a recall that we missed last week because we were talking about the e-bike recalls. Trek has recalled 75,000 plus bikes for coaster brake defect, and that's on some kids' bikes. They say that they were not lubricated properly from the factory and could lead to premature wear and, in some cases, a brake failure. They've had no reports of that actually happening, I think is what they said, or no.
Do they have a year range?
2024 through 2026.
Oh, okay.
Pre-caliber 12, 16, and 20. The Electra Towny Rental 1 step through. The Electra Sprocket 1 16 inch.
Wait, they had an E? No, Towny isn't. I thought that was.
That's just like the Towny, like the.
No, I know, but the Electra Towny Go is what I was thinking of. I was like, dude, they had an e-bike with a coaster brake? Like, Jesus.
And it says you also will get a $20, if you bring it in, you'll get a $20 store credit for getting it inspected. I'm assuming what they just are doing is having shops lubricate the coaster brake. I don't know if it's a replacement thing. They don't say in this article, but you can go in, get it inspected, and get your $20 in-store credit as an incentive to get the fix done.
I'm going to see if I can find that somewhere else, because I do feel like it might be... I'm gonna look it up here. No, you are getting a replacement wheel.
Okay.
And I just say that because asking every local bike shop to be competent to overhaul a coaster brake hub... And I'll say this, I have swapped the axle on a coaster brake hub twice in one day before. And then I had a customer bring me a coaster brake in a baggie, and I could not put it back together. I just straight up, they had something wrong, and I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Oh, so. I found their actual, like, their PDF from Trek, and it does say, yeah.
It said it on Bicycle Retailer, okay. Too. So, yeah.
Yeah, get that checked out and make sure that you are safe. Oh, we talked a little bit about... Well, I'm going to go first to this dissector.
You got to dissect it?
Not too much. The new Maxxis dissector. It's not a dissector 2. It's just the new dissector that they've just improved the previous version, and they're just, you know, calling it the new one. So, you know, if you're a bike shop and you start ordering dissectors, it's still going to look exactly the same as far as the label. It will just have a slightly different tread pattern. It says it has more predictable traction as you lean the bike over to turn. That's the improvement they've made. It looks very similar.
Also, I just want to read part of this headline. Canyon Bicycles credits oversupply and a oversupply and aggressive discounting blamed for Canyon sales decrease. So you're telling me people only buy Canyon bikes when they're cheaper than bikes at their local bike shop?
Yep. That's it.
I mean, I have one. It was cheaper than a bike from my local bike shop.
I do want to mention with that dissector, they do tease in the article, will there be a 32-inch Maxxis dissector? They referenced an unlabeled tease at DT Swiss's Craft Bike Days show. So there was a 32-inch bike that looked like it had a dissector tread on it.
Well, if it looked like a dissector and it was 32 inches in diameter, it was a Maxxis dissector, because Maxxis is leading the charge on quality tires for 32.
Yep, and Maxxis had no comment. So
of course they didn't.
But the UCI has said that they will not have restrictions on wheel size, and they will allow 32-inch wheels in races next season.
But no mullet. You can't race a mullet in XC. That is a UCI rule. So your wheel size, you can run any wheel size you want as long as front and rear match. In downhill and enduro, I think they lift that. But for XC and short track, it is the same wheel size front and rear. If you're reading that article to find it, you won't. I just know that.
All right. I didn't know if maybe they changed their minds.
I think that would be a separate headline. I don't see that changing. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the only new shit that I thought was really all that interesting. Anything else that you think was cool?
No, it's December. There's not a lot of cool stuff coming out.
God, my ear itches. All right, you want to read some listener questions?
Yeah.
Let's see. We read that one. I just didn't unmark it. Did we read that one last week? I don't think we did.
We didn't. Let's read that one.
Okay.
They had obviously not listened where I said I've replaced my jacket.
Oh, well, this was from before that. Like, this would have been a last week question. We just didn't get to it.
Oh, well, run through it.
All right. From Byron. He says, hey, Matt, I heard you're looking for a new cycling jacket after you ripped your Gore one. I've been wearing the Pactimo winter jacket for over a decade and still love it. You may want to check them out as they are all on sale right now. I'm also 6'4" with long arms, and the XL fits well. A question for the group, even though most of you ride Specialized, if you could only choose one suspension platform, 4-bar, single pivot, dual link, split pivot, etc., which would it be? It may be trail dependent. Is the JRA crew riding Specialized because you think it is the best, or because that is what you can get with the shop discount? Thanks, Byron. I've never owned a Specialized.
Shit, you haven't.
Yeah.
I was just like, nah, she forgot that one, and I was thinking really hard. No, you didn't.
I mean, I've kind of like drooled over a couple of them before, but I've never purchased one.
I think I've owned a number. Let's see. I'm going to do some quick math. I briefly owned a Crux. I had the Epic. I had the first stump jumper, second stump jumper. I mean, I've had like 4 of them. Kenny had a couple of stump jumpers, at least 1 or 2 stump jumpers, Turbo Levo and a Turbo Knievo. I mean, part of it is, I'm going to run through some things. I think what they're asking is really hard. Who is this person?
Byron.
Byron. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to answer this, because even if you look through someone's lineup, it's going to change depending upon the product category. So I don't think that's I don't want to say fair, but it's not really a thing to like say I'm only going to ride this moving forward. And I say that because, you know, we look at Specialized, for argument's sake. You know, they have that, I don't even know what the stump jumper is. It's got a pivot back there. I think it's a modified
4-bar.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even care is the thing. Well, hold on. Let me go back and answer the other part of your question first. I mean, when you work for a Specialized dealer and they make really good products and you get industry pricing on it, it's kind of dumb not to ride one. Like, if the bike that you're shopping is offered by Specialized and you work for a Specialized dealer, you're going to be really hard-pressed to find something that's better than the Specialized for that category at that price.
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you're like a super suspension snob.
Well, but where I was going is, you look at the Epic, it's a Flex Day single pivot bike. So is it a modified four bar because it has a flex? I don't know. I don't get into that stuff. But like you look at Santa Cruz, the Blur doesn't use VPP because they want to save weight. And then the, you know, Tallboy and Up all use VPP because they want the ride characteristics of it. And if I was going to buy a huge enduro bike, like 170 rear travel, it would be high pivot just because that bike's going to go uphill terribly anyway. So it may as well go downhill like, I don't know, you're floating on a cloud, sitting on a heated blanket with a pile of kittens in your lap. I mean, so saying like I can only ride one suspension type for the rest of my life. Well, what happens when I choose VPP and then I get into Leadville? Does that mean that I have to race a high ball because I can't have any rear suspension, or do I have to race a tall boy because it's still VPP? That would suck. And I'm just devil's advocating this. I think I've said this a bunch before. The Trek ABP is like a split pivot design. I went fast on that bike. I had a Trek Top Fuel before that. It went fast. I had that Rocky Mountain Element. It never really got raced, but that bike was fast. The Epic was fast. The Stump Jumper is fast in its category. You know, my placing and positioning in the enduros had nothing to do with the bike and its limitations. It had to do with how much my little fingy squozed on those breakies. I mean,
yeah. And I mean, I haven't had as many bikes. I think I turn over bikes more like Kenny than like Matt. I've ridden Pivot's DW Link.
Well, you rode Niner CVA.
Yeah, I rode that. I rode
Pivot's. That was your first full suspension bike.
Yeah, Pivot's DW Link, Spots.
Living Link.
Living Link. I had a Trek Fuel EX briefly. And I have to say, like, out of all of them, like, that was the only one that occasionally would bother me a little bit, because if you hit something really square-edged when you were climbing, it's like the whole back end kind of, like, stopped suspending, and it would kind of like, I don't know, like hump up over what it was, like lift you up over it instead of like absorbing that impact. That was pretty rare though. Like otherwise it was a really good bike. Like I don't feel like I've disliked any of the suspensions. I think out of all of them, the Spot Living Link thing was probably my favorite. Like that just worked really well. It just isn't very light. You know, it's kind of like VPP with Santa Cruz. Like they don't make a full suspension bike that doesn't have that. And so they don't have a super light full suspension bike. I mean, that's not really like their target audience anyway. Like they don't need to make a short travel, super go kind of bike. So yeah, like I really like how that one rode, but the other ones were pretty good too. I'd say that the Living Link pedals as well as like DW Link does, but something about it makes it way easier to get off of the ground when you want to boost something.
Yeah, I mean, where we're going with this is, sure, there's going to be some nuances. Some bikes are going to ride better than others. Like, I rode the Spot Rive.
Yeah.
And that bike was way too much tall boy, not enough epic for me. It just,
yeah,
it did not ride like a light bike. Like, the Trek Fuel EX felt as comfortable going uphill, and it went downhill better. And, you know, it's nothing against Spot as a company. I just don't like their bikes. I had a Rocker and I thought it was too stiff. And then I rode the Rive and it didn't do what I wanted it to do. It didn't have that kind of...
It's not like a cross-country bike.
No, it wasn't. But if you're coming from a 2013, you know, Gary Fisher... Rumblefish. I couldn't even remember them. If you're coming from a 2013 Rumblefish, just go buy a bike with the suspension that you need or think you need. You're going to be blown away, right? I mean, that rider could get on a new chisel, and it would be faster uphill and more capable downhill. Just geometry, dropper post, 1x12, all the good stuff. You know, that would be a huge upgrade, right? And I mean, I wouldn't say go buy a Moto Bikang. I pulled up their website, their Hall CF, their 160 spec bike that they claim is under 26 pounds, which can't be.
No.
And the seat tube angle is like 12 degrees and it still has a front derailleur tab. Like, that bike's probably not that great anymore. Yeah. But
well, what I was going to say is, like, if you're looking at people who work in shops and what bikes they ride, yeah, it's going to be whatever bikes the shop sells. And also, most likely, like, whatever brand has the best, you know, shop deal. And the reason behind that is, like, they're going to ride the one that's cheapest in the category they want, because all modern bikes are pretty fucking good at their category. You know, if you want a cross-country bike, don't buy a tall boy. Buy a cross-country bike.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fine.
And I don't want folks to think I'm dogging on the tall boy. I just think that is the hardest category to sell right now. That like roughly 120, 130. Or one, let's call it 110, 15 in the rear to 120 in the rear. Right? That range, 110 to 120 in the rear, 120 to 130 in the front. That is the most confused segment in the mountain bike world right now. And it's because some bikes are like the tall boy, where they have a mega tower, a high tower, a tall boy, and then a blur trail. Well, there's a big line in the sand between the tall boy and the blur trail. On paper, they're not very far apart by travel numbers, but they're way far apart in terms of what I've always called their DNA. The tall boy is a very small trail bike. It's going to climb like so, and it's going to descend like so, and it's probably going to let you descend at a pace that makes your rear wheel very unhappy. Now, on the other hand, let's switch brands. Something that I'm not selling, you know, that's why Yeti makes the SB120 and the ASR. It's because those bikes are very different. Like, the ASR is designed to be an XC bike, and the SB120 is designed to be a short travel trail bike. You know, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just you need to figure out what side of that line you want to stand on. And personally, I've always wanted to be on the capable XC side of that line.
Yeah.
Did I talk too much there?
No, I think we covered it. We talked about that one.
So, I mean, did we answer that question?
Yeah, that was about the Rivian e-bike that we shit on.
This is a book. Let me get adjusted over here so I can see your screen.
Do you want to read it, or do we want to, like, save it for a Kenny episode? Or? I mean, this is like a super fan level form entry, so, you know.
All right, yeah, this is a Kenny question. Okay, yeah, this is a Kenny level question.
Yeah, I think that this is, it's from...
Do we have any other questions?
No, that's it. That's from Full Face Ray Ray. We will get to that one because you deserve... Being the super
the full
fan.
Crew.
Yeah, the super fan that you are, you deserve the full crew answering your question.
All right, so...
Not that any of the rest of you aren't, you know, also deserving of the full crew, but you know...
No, like, there's a difference, though. Let's see, that's kind of a Kenny topic, and then that's a... I have one thing I want to talk about real quick. If you live where it's cold, buy... winter tires.
Oh God!
Just do it.
Oh, this is okay. This is something I should have brought up.
So
remember back in the summer, I got new tires for my 4Runner. The what is it, Michelin?
I didn't buy them. I don't know.
It's the Wild Peak AT, and it's a great. It did great all summer.
No, Falcon makes the Wild Peak.
Okay, whatever.
It's not a Michelin tire.
Okay,
it blew my mind when you said you had like. You're like, I want to fight Michelin or something. And I'm like, I didn't know you had Michelin tires. No, it's a Falcon Wild Peak.
All right. Yeah.
But Andrea bought Wild Peaks and apparently they're dog ass in the snow.
Yeah. So like I've had the KO2 is what I had on my 4Runner that I had replaced. And the whatever it is, like the 3-peak logo or designation that some tires get, that means like they're not going to kill you in the snow, but they're not great. Like, you shouldn't expect them to be, like, a full-on winter tire, snow tire. But they did well enough that, you know, I didn't really feel like I needed anything different for the wintertime. But I got these Wild Peaks. And it snowed a little bit. And I noticed they seemed like they didn't get quite as much traction. And then it snowed a lot. And I couldn't get up the plowed county road to get to like the shitty, less plowed road to my house. Like I literally had to put my truck in four-wheel drive to drive up the county road that had like 2 inches of plowed and packed snow on it because these tires had such terrible traction. Like I could literally be going like just coasting down the hill in these. And if I started going over like 25 miles an hour when I hit brake bumps or like a little like snow rut or something that was a little frozen, the truck would just start to kind of slide in a direction. So yeah, like I just ordered a set of winter tires to put on and I'll swap between summer and winter like a lot of people who live in the mountains do. And I expect them to be better than, you know, like the KO2s were okay. But yeah, like the winter tires are going to be noticeably better than anything else.
And to throw it out there, we drove separately today. I went out with Andrea and I drove separately because she was going to stay longer than me. And when I came home, I could not drive up my road in two-wheel drive. And I have KO2s because I never wear out tires on my truck because I don't drive it that much. You know, Andrea's put, what, 30,000 miles on that truck?
Yeah, something like that.
And I've put 31,000 miles on my truck in the last decade. I mean, that's why I have the Subaru, because the Subaru goes places that are far, fast, with cruise control and heated seats. The mini truck hauls shit. It's pretty, you know.
It's a little bit of a farm truck.
It's awesome, though. But when we left today, I drove to the beaver trapping spot in two-wheel drive, and I only put it in four-wheel drive once I got stuck later. I pulled in and out of that parking lot that wasn't packed. I mean, the KO2s are better in the snow than the Wild Peaks are for sure, but it was icy when I got home on our road, and I was like, all right, I'm going to see how far I can go. Like, if I don't leave Howard, I don't unlock my manual hubs. I just don't care. Like, I just leave the hubs locked. When it's snowy, just leave the hubs locked, and I use the you know, shift knob inside or the second shifter inside all the time. And I was like, all right, I think I can make it home. And I couldn't. And I even gave her, like, the little bit of beans, and it just, my truck was sitting at, like, a 25-degree angle in the road. And I just got out and locked my hubs in, put it in four-wheel drive, and it was like, brrr.
Yeah, and today I got my truck stuck once, but it was a traction. So like if you get stuck, and this is just for, like, I didn't know this when I first got a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Hold on. If your four-wheel drive vehicle's new and it has traction control.
So traction control will cut power to wheels that are spinning. Even if those wheels were about to get traction after they spun a little bit, your truck, you know, the computer might be like, nope, don't, you're not going to spin. That's not traction. So it'll make those stop spinning. And that will make you stay stuck. So for high in my truck, traction control is on.
Because that's what you would use on snowy roads.
Yeah.
Commuting and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I put it in four low and gave it some beans and it slid around a little bit. And eventually I got like, I don't know, it was like, I was like 6 feet off the road in some snow that was like over the hubcaps. And it was kind of like, it was a little, I don't know, dense because a snowplow had just come through and like piled the snow up right there. And I parked on top of it. And when I went to leave, the truck was like, the traction control was like, no. And yeah, I put it in four low and it was fine. It got out of there, just no problem. But
and if you have a shitty old truck like mine, there's no traction control. So
you just, you know, give it the beans.
God take the wheel.
Yeah. Give it the beans or, you know, get your winch out. You don't have a winch.
I don't have a winch.
But
I've got a cute smile and I would just stand there and wait for help, I guess.
Yeah, enough people drive on that road.
I really need a winch on that truck.
Yeah, winches are super helpful.
No one makes a... Let me rephrase that. I don't have a winch on the Frontier because what it would cost to get a winch-compatible bumper for the Frontier.
Yeah.
Hot tip, or just quick note, it is more than I paid for the Frontier to get an ARB bumper for the Frontier.
And could you get one of those, like,
weld-together kits?
Yeah, like a front hitch that you could put a
hitch
bump. Okay.
No, there's not... I haven't found a front hitch. Well, okay, so... Maybe I found one but it mounts underneath the lower plastics. So I would just smash it into stuff all the time. Like it sits 8 inches off the ground.
Oh, that wouldn't be very good. But is that it? Or are you going to like Google something and we're going to talk about it more?
Nah, I'm done.
All right. Well, I know it's been a short show, but we don't have Kenny here to keep us in check and talk more. So we're just going to go ahead and wrap it up, read our patrons, and move on.
Holy shit, it exists now. I think that'd be really bad for your truck.
All right, we don't have to get into it. But I'm going to read patrons. So our patrons, starting at, well, we have lots of patrons, but the ones that are $10 a month or more, we read on air. At $10 a month, we've got Kurt, Timothy, Taylor, Zwift, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Samuel, Burt Reynolds, Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taperbore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gabe Horn, Cam Irish One, Zach, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Phil McCrevis, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Just Another Asshole on a Bike, Raccoon and I Getting High, Underscore, Noah, Cool Beans, Matt's Church Bell, Oliver, Clothes Off, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Tom P, Butt Stuff, Tyler Durden, Epstein Island Bike Trails and Pizza Buffet, at 14, oh sorry, that one was at $11.11 per month, Patamelon Disco Ball at 14 Australian, Dean at 16.50 Australian, at $20 a month, we've got Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, at $26.06 per month, Just a Dub Bottom Bracket in a Chris King World,
Dub for Life,
Harley at 30, What's Wrong with Andrea This Week at 31,
God damn, he figured it out.
Good job, Troy. It only took you, what, 3 fucking years? And Six Pack Outdoors, We're Touched by the Tism, powered by Tylenol, at 50.
And I just want y'all to know, I would take Tylenol for you.
You would take Tylenol while you're pregnant?
I didn't want you to talk about that on the air.
All right, everyone. I hope you have enjoyed this short, sweet, 2-person episode. Thank you for listening. And good night.
Shut her down. Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.